This call is being recorded.
So these are the reasons why we said, okay, 2.4 should focus in the direction of clustering. There are already steps done, even in 2.3, in the clustering direction. There is the clusterer module, which you know, provides a quite good solid foundation for that allow different other modules to cluster their functionality. But we said that we need to do more at the engine itself, under the hood, so directly into the clustering underlayer, and then to do also more when it comes to critical functionalities that has to scale in OpenCX. And we will see about the user location, about presence, about call center stuff, and so on and so on. So there are many functionalities, high level functionalities that needs to scale by the, to be clustered by their nature. So I will start first with a short introduction on what we did at the or and what's on the roadmap when it comes to the clustering engine itself. So what's behind the you know, the waterline, what's not visible. We extended the cluster module to enhance the, let's say, the capability of controlling the whole cluster topology, to be able to deal with eventual miscommunication between the cluster nodes, like rerouting traffic through different nodes if a direct link is down. So basically to deal with broken links. Another aspect which is only in 2.4 is the dynamic topology, basically the ability of new nodes to join the cluster without any kind of database support. So basically you don't have to define anywhere the cluster into the database. New nodes can join to an existing cluster, and automatically they can start sharing data and process traffic. I don't want to get into, let's say, security details when it comes to joining cluster and all these aspects, because in OpenCX case it's something that belongs to the infrastructure, and we assume that this kind of a security, at least at this step, it's addressed directly at the network/IP layer. So right now there is no authentication and anything like that between nodes when joining. But in order to be able to add new nodes or to restart nodes in the cluster, you have to have a sync support. So basically a node, once joining, it's able to dump all the data, you know, existing in the cluster from other already running nodes. Like I have nodes hosting clustering nodes hosting let's say registrations. If I have a new node, it'll automatically sync the data, so it will fetch from the running nodes, it will fetch the user location data, so it will be also able to have to synchronize itself with the rest of the nodes. So this data syncing is a mechanism that it's almost there, added. It's at the clustering level, and it will be used by multiple modules. For example, already mentioned the user location, also the dialogue by the dialogue module. If you start a new node, it will automatically fetch data about the ongoing live calls from the existing nodes. So there is a lot of work which sometimes it's not directly visible when you use it, but there is all this work in order to keep the cluster support in a very consistent and robust way. In terms of let's say, useful functionality, the clustering module directly offers some functionality for scripting, so not to the modules. Basically, it's already present into the 2.4 branch, is what we call the script-based cluster functionality. Basically, directly at the script level, you can build your own kind of distributed logic that requires to exchange data between the cluster nodes. Shortly, just to show you in the online documentation, from the script level, you have the ability to send a request inside the cluster, maybe to a specific node or to broadcast it to different nodes. You have the ability to reply to such an request, and eventually to do actions. Everything, if you look in the documentation, it's linked through the in a very nice way using events. So whenever a cluster node receives the message on the destination node, this will translate into an event. So this will allow you to build whatever kind of, as I said, dynamic or custom, let's say, communication between the cluster nodes without requiring any new module implementation. Just put together your own logic directly at the script level. And it's interesting because this functionality was actually it came from a discussion with one of the with the people from the community, and we try to to make it more generic and nicer. So that's a good example on how the feedback from the community or simply addressing your needs may turn into some really nice additions. But let me actually move on and show the most important thing, like what we had in mind about how to cluster the user location thing. And I'll have leave you ready for this to explain you what how we see this clustering ability, because it's not so simple for the user location. There are a lot of constraints, and what's the plan. Livio, are you with us? Just in case, Livio, you're
still muted. Right, I just muted myself. Okay. And hi, everyone. What is the screen share looking like? Is it working? Can you see the tab? Because on my side, it looks like I'm sharing, but I'm not sure if it's actually working.
Okay, I just stopped my sharing, so you can try again, just to be sure.
Okay. Share a window. And
okay, you are good to go.
Okay. It's quite an honor to have the responsibility of putting together all the requirements for the distributed user location topic, because there have been so many discussions, and I've actually put them together on the website. If you go to development and here on the left, topics, you can reach the design page, and pretty much there were some talks about it in 2013, and then we put some ideas together in 2015, and finally it's starting to take shape now. So the thing about it is that it's not a new problem. People have, one way or another, dealt with the problems associated with distributing your users across various locations and whatnot. But we aim to provide a solution that is easy to use, that is robust, that's easy to script, and easy to scale, right? So you can easily add nodes to your platform and also maintain it. What if you need to make certain modifications to it? Or anyway, that's pretty much what we have in mind. So let's take a look at some major topics or challenges that are tied to this. First off, we want to distribute it geographically, right? We want to have multiple locations and add them and manage them in an easy way. We want to traverse the NAT, especially in these kind of topologies where phones present contacts from behind the network. You need to make sure that you properly route out to that phone. We want to make sure that we don't send pings from each OpenSIPS instance, right? Replicating the state of the contacts across multiple nodes is good, but by default, you'll have each OpenSIPS start pinging that contact because it knows about it. So this is an additional problem that we need to tackle. Next, we have to have it horizontally scalable. So what if you have something like tens of millions of subscribers? You can't just throw them all in one box. You have to somehow partition all that data. And this is another big challenge or big topic in this so-called distributed user location buzzword. And last but not least, there is the ever so present high availability concern, right? What if I start losing a node or a pop? What if a whole data center goes down? How does my service survive? And we believe that these are the major topics that have to be addressed. And with regards to this, we've built kind of two models. Again, these are starting from some network considerations. So first off, we have that topology where you just want to throw nodes at the platform. I just want you don't have that layer, that session border controller layer. You just throw, you just have the nodes. Clients are directly registering into them, and you want this to work across multiple locations, as we can see in this diagram. And this type of solution has, the biggest challenge with this is to properly ensure that the calls that route to a certain user go through its home box, right? So for example, if we have a user registering to the top location, location A here, and its state replicates to both locations, if he starts receiving calls in one of the two, let's say he receives a call in C, we now have to go out through A because of NAT considerations. So this is kind of what happens when you don't have that SBC front end. We're going to look at it in the second half. So let's look at some specific ways in which we want to implement this type of user-facing solution. First off, we have a plain SIP-based approach. And this is more or less possible even with the current OpenSIPS code. In fact, this is the state-of-the-art solution right now. And there are some pros and cons to it. The biggest downside actually is that you have this complex scripting and it's very tough to maintain. And you get a lot of traffic since you have to replicate all those registers, right? So each contact. But pretty much it's a working solution. So starting from that, and now that we have the amazing cluster capabilities, we can do something like this. where the entire communications taking place between these instances actually goes through, is entirely cluster-based. And if we make this change, all of a sudden we can afford to send a lot less data. We can afford to send less often, because all of a sudden it's now a question of, is this user reachable in this location? Rather, take each of the contact of this user and mirror it over to the other side. You just announce its presence there, and that's it. If he registers from, I don't know, multiple devices, there's no need to send additional packets. So again, this is very nitty gritty, low level, but it kind of gives you an idea for what kinds of advantages you can get out of the cluster support. Also, Bogdan mentioned earlier the network link redundancy idea, where pretty much, let's imagine that we have, so again, like I said earlier, we have our phone registered into A, and from C, he's easily reachable. But what if the A to C link falls? All of a sudden, he will still be reachable due to how the cluster routing works. The cluster will notice that there's still a data path, you know, through B, and that's how the calls will route. And there's nothing for you to do inside the script or anything. It just works out of the box. So this is the third advantage of this solution. It is so easy to script. There is pretty much all you do is save and lookup, and it will feel just like your regular location, as in the all of the solutions that you've built up until now. But it's so cluster aware and geographically distributed and everything. It looks good from my point of view. As of downsides, really, this is all I could come up with, that it's cumbersome to troubleshoot the cluster packets. But even then, so we could make some Wireshark additions or some ways to troubleshoot this type of traffic between your locations when you're building the service, when you're testing it, QAing it, whatever. So let's move on. I'm not sure how am I fitting with the time, but let's go through with the second network model. And this is where we finally have that nice SBC in front of our phones, and we as the cluster developers don't have to worry about things such as NAT. All of a sudden, we just send it out to the SBC. Everything is taken care of. So what we need to worry about now is pretty much making sure that we distribute the data between the nodes, we take over some responsibilities such as pinging. And that is the gist of this kind of solution. We have a cluster with each node having the same data set. It is fully replicating all its contacts to all the other nodes. When a node boots up or restarts, we are going to have, is it all right? It's here on the to-do list. We have a sync. We'll have a synchronization mechanism, just load everything from a free node that it picks up. And with regards to pinging, again, we have that problem solved already, on paper at least, where the cluster kind of self adapts, and each node knows what are the contacts that it needs to ping so that there is zero redundant pinging happening from the cluster over to the outside phones. I guess there is no need to say anything about the high availability idea. That's pretty much taken care of. Net traversal, that's solved. And geodistribution, that I guess you just span this entire cluster geographically. And that's it. Again, works. The second half here, we asked ourselves, or we tried to find some limitations to this model. And again, the obvious limitation is that, wait, well, if you are holding the entire data set of the user location on each node, then how are you really going to scale that? And that's where the advanced topology comes into play. Because now, imagine again, data sets of something like tens of millions of subscribers, maybe into the hundreds of millions. This magnitude of data is something that we effectively cannot manage anymore in the OpenSIPS cluster. So our design for this is to designate all of this data to a specialized database that OpenSIPS and actually the entire user location module in OpenSIPS will communicate with. That's pretty much it. There's not much to it. So all the contacts reside there. There is no longer the need to synchronize nodes on startup or something like that. They just work off the database. And each layer can be scaled accordingly. So depending on how the system works, you may add additional partitions to the database cluster, you know, to scale up your reads, scale up your writes. You have a lot more flexibility, and it simply it feels like the right approach with when you have to manage so much data. And right, we feel that these two models are sufficient to cover the requirements of pretty much everything that we've seen so far in terms of production OpenSIPS deployments. And again, they are the result of several years of discussions and feedback from the community. If by any chance you feel like this is not enough for you, or wait, that idea is wrong, that thing is not going to work with us, or something like this, please get in the discussion. And this is pretty much the last time to make a change. Okay, so let's move on to our next topic, which I think will be presence clustering. And that will be covered by Bogdan, right?
Yep. Thank you, Livio. We choose to, let's say, to present at this point the presence clustering as the next topic, just because it's quite similar to user location. It's more or less about data which is produced by the users, a lot of data, and then it has to be shared between all the users. With the presence, basically a presence cluster is actually the ability for you as end user to publish data or to subscribe for data to any node, and you'll get exactly the same behavior. It doesn't matter that you are with nodes A, B, C, or D, or whatever. you will see everybody in the cluster and you'll have access to all the data. In terms of storage, the cluster has to be to scale in terms of, you know, how many subscriptions, how many data can published data can be handled. So these are the requirements we started from. From the presence, again, comparing with the user location, things are a bit simpler because we don't have so strong constraints in terms of network, like NAT traversal or the TCP connections, because each party involved in, you know, sharing presence data will be all the time connected to a single node. Usually you publish to a single node, usually you subscribe to a single node. So you don't have, this more complex interaction between multiple parties within the same event. Like when you have a call, you have the caller and the callee, which may be connected to different nodes. In presence, things are a bit much simpler when it comes to, network constraints. And we have two models again for presence. Basically is with or without using an external database. And by database, I mean a NoSQL database. If we fully rely, let's say in the simplest way of deploying, if we simply rely on the OpenSIP's capability in order to provide the whole clustering and storing support, basically whenever an entity publishes some data through a node, that node, using the clustering support, will broadcast the published data through all through the entire cluster. And the nodes, you know, where we have subscribers interested in that data, will simply retain the data and it will, you know, convert it to a notify in order to update the watcher. So basically, in this case, the data storage will be on the nodes. Each node will simply store data they are interested in. So data we have subscriber registered for. So on a single node will store information only for the entities the subscribers are interested into, nothing more. And the data is actually shared through this broadcast mechanism. So whenever some data it's newly published, automatically it will be broadcasted through the cluster to all the nodes. Of course, this approach is again simpler because you don't need any additional tools, but it's limited in terms of how much actual data, or let's say translated into how many users you can put into, because, you know, each node has to more or less locally keep information about relevant to its subscribers. And secondly, this kind of broadcast, it may create a really, strong storm of packages inside the cluster, you know, each node broadcasting information about his own publishers. So if you want to move into the area where you actually want to scale as load in terms of users and the data, we have the second model, which relies, of course, on a NoSQL external database that, similar to the user location, will provide, you know, the high storage capacity, data redundancy, data partitioning or sharding. So there is a lot of information that will, there is a lot of, you know, support from the actual database support. So the node will actually exchange information exclusively through the database, in terms of reading the the published data. And
Bogdan?
Yes.
Were you do you have anything that you want to share? Because we don't see anything. There's nothing shared right now.
There is no no schematics or diagrams for the presence part. Right now there is, for this part at least, there is nothing to share.
Okay, thank you.
No worries, welcome. So everything will rely actually on the NoSQL database in order to share the data. The clustering support will just to provide the ability to send kind of a notifications inside the cluster. So whenever some new data is published, the data will be written into the database, and then it will be on a broadcast, but with no data, just as a signal saying, okay, you know, this data was modified. So this publisher updated its own data. So whoever is interested into it, just go and read it from the database. So it's just kind of a signaling layer. It's not a data. Layer. So that's the way we plan to approach this presence support. And just as a small comment on this, maybe most of the people do think about presence only, you know, for like end user to user, you know, presence to see the status. But actually, presence, it's quite heavily used for other systems, like when you have the BLF, shared lines appearance, you know, message waiting indication, and many, many others. So generically speaking, presence is a quite a powerful mechanism to exchange information between entities. So that's why we said, okay, we need to have some clustering support, because lately there are more and more services relying on this kind of a presence support. To move on, another aspect we are looking at in terms of clustering is the call center part. Maybe the name of the call center is too strong, because what we have in OpenSIPS is a call queuing mechanism. There is no support in the call center for dealing with the end user, actually with the agent itself, is queuing and call distribution. And what we want to have here is the ability of an agent to be shared between multiple queues located on different servers, eventually in different data centers. So you, as a single agent, you may be part of queues in different locations. So the clustering layer will actually synchronize the agent status between all the queues. So the queues all the time will know exactly, okay, right now this agent is involved in a call with a different, probably with a different call, with a different queue. So I have to wait before sending whatever call to it, because that's the limitation we have right now. Even if an agent can serve multiple queues, this is possible right now if the queues are inside the same OpenSIPS instance. So you cannot distribute the agents. So in 2.4, we want to have this ability for an agent to be part of to serve queues on different instances, eventually in different locations. And one of the last topics, at least for the clustering, is the Anycast support. It's a quite complex support. Razvan will present what are our plans in regards to the Anycast support in OpenSIPS for the 2.4. So Razvan.
Hey, hi guys. Do you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay, let me share your presentation. So we've started discussing about Anycast a while ago. Hold just a second, please. Okay. And hold on one second. Okay. Can you hear? Can you see the tab now?
Yeah, everything is perfect.
Thank you. So we've started to talk about Anycast in the high availability context. Basically, high availability and load balancing. And this was quite. I've made a presentation that was quite successful this year at the AstroCon conference regarding what this Anycast means and whether we have it or what should we do in order to make it work. So basically, Anycast, probably most of you already heard about it. It's a networking topic, which allows you basically to have the same IP, so a single IP assigned to different hosts. This way, when a message is sent to that IP, any of those hosts might get the message. And it's basically used to balance traffic to one machine within that cluster of machines. There's no connection state maintained, so this means that it only runs for UDP, it doesn't run for TCP, but luckily SIP is a UDP-based protocol, so there we are, that's why we use it. How it works, imagine you have a client, we have an Anycast IP, the blue one is an Anycast IP, you have a client that sends an invite to OpenSIPS, and then OpenSIPS sends it further over a Unicast interface to an asterisk. When the 200 OK comes in, it's sent to the client. However, since it's a Anycast IP, the request coming from the user might end on a different server, such as in our case in this middle server, right? According to the routing information, we'll know where to send it to the proper asterisk. So it works, right? Let's see further if it really does. So what happens if we get a buy? Then the buy might end up on a completely different server. According to routing information, we'll know exactly how to end up on how to send it to the asterisk machine. The reply comes in very easy, and that would be nice. But what happens with the dialogue? We have to use, so in this case, the third information, if it doesn't know anything about the dialogue, the initial dialogue, it won't be able to generate the CR. So that's what are these red arrows. These red arrows show that all these instances need to share the OpenSIPS need to share the dialogues. And this is basically done over the bin interface using the cluster module Bogdan talked about earlier. So we do need to replicate call information using the cluster module. So all the instances should be in the same cluster. We are already doing that. If you are using dialog replication, you should know that this is already available. So then why do we talk about Anycast? Because things are not that simple. Although dialog information is already replicated, what about transaction information? Imagine that we have this scenario where the an outbound call where the client sends 200 OK to a completely different instance. If this instance doesn't know about the transaction, well, it will know how to route the 200, okay, based on the transaction information in the VIA. But what about this guy? Well, this guy will start to send retransmissions to the callee because it didn't get the 200 okay yet. And after a while, it will probably generate a 408 timeout here. So it will basically decline the call. And that's completely broken, right? So that's why we also need a mechanism similar to how we replicate the dialogues, we also need to replicate transactions. Why don't we have that yet? Well, that's because replicating transaction is a completely big topic to talk about. First of all, we have huge set of data. Imagine that we need to have all the callers and callees information, have to store information for each of the branches. Imagine we are doing parallel or serial forking. And we also need to replicate all the messaging sent. That's for retransmission purposes. For example, if the caller does not respond, we need to make a retransmission and so on. So the data is very volatile. You know, we probably know that the transaction has a relatively short lifespan. It's, for example, the invite transaction is the largest one. It starts when the invite comes and ends when a negative or a positive reply comes in. And we also need to do some sort of complex mechanism to coordinate who's in charge of doing retransmissions, because if we have three instances that each of them each of them have the transaction, all of them will start to do retransmission, and that's probably not very nice. So we come up with two different approaches that we are going to investigate. First of all, is a lightweight Anycast. So we have this scenario where we have a user registered here. In this case, when we send an invite, we store this instance, has the transaction, creates the transaction, and stores it locally. When the 200 OK comes in, before sending the 200 OK to the destination, it will also send an event saying, hey, you know, you don't really have to do any retransmissions because I already received a final reply. So basically, in this case, in this solution, the instance from the right will always replicate, will always send the events to OpenSIPS. Imagine that these are not complex, not big SIP messages. They're just some small events. This way, this is very, very efficient, because the transaction is always stored where the request first gets in. So you don't have to replicate that huge amount of data anywhere. Only the events are replicated, which are basically very lightweight. You will only say, well, I've got the 200 OK, stop retransmitting, and that's it. It's very fast, but the minus is that if the initial machine crashes, the transaction is lost. So you basically, if you lose the initial machine, all the state will become, the entire setup will probably screw up the call for, actually the call init. And another thing that's not possible is there's no way to do any processing on the replies. For example, if you want to add headers or do some, I don't know, customs processing on replies, you will not be able to do it because you don't have the transaction on the second node. A different approach that we thought of was a full Anycast solution when, again, we have this scenario, but when the 200 OK comes in, we don't rely to the Asterisk server, but rather send it to the right, to the OpenSIPS instance that has that transaction. Well, we won't be doing a SIP, we won't do SIP messaging, but rather we'll pack everything in a binary message so that it is going to be very, very fast and efficient. And this brings a lot of pluses. Why? Because you will be able to do any processing on the reply, because you will get the reply on the first node, on the initial node. So this means that you can build even more complex scenarios. The pros is that it offers a full failover and high availability. But the cons is that it requires more traffic to process. So we haven't decided yet which one we will be doing. Probably we'll do both, because each of them has, as you've seen, have pluses and minuses. If you guys have any other things in mind that can be done around here, for example, we are also thinking about, we are considering about doing transaction replication. So this might be an interesting topic in this scenario, because again, we are working with transactions and we might want to have transactions persistency. To be honest, I'm not sure whether that's a really a big thing right now in this context, but it might get interested. Again, if you have any suggestions or if you have any setups that you can think of and will not fit to this one of these solutions, let us know and we will analyze them and come with a different solution. That's it. Thanks. I think Bogdan is next.
Yeah. Now. Thank you, Razvan.
Thank you too. Bye.
So. These are the plans in regards to the clustering support for the OpenSIPS 2.4. Nevertheless, we want to continue some work on the integration level. Razvan, if you could stop the sharing on your side, so I can restart it from here, please. Okay, thank you. So we want to continue with the integration, especially with the Homer and with the free switch integration. In terms of Homer integration, it's that saying, your appetite grows as while you are eating. In the same way, once we had a lot of new data types collected and reported in Homer in the 2.3 version, like what are the REST queries, what are the TCP events related to a call, and so on. We discovered that more things can be added, for example, TCP statistics or database events or media relay events. Related to a call to be reported through HAP. So when you go in Homer and you have your call, you can see, okay, what were the DB queries performed for that call? You can see what were the interactions with the media relays for that call. So it's more information available correlated with that call. In terms of the free switch integration, right now we have the ability to read load statistics from free switch in order to control the balancing. But thanks to contribution and work from Giovanni Maruzzelli, we are looking into more than that. We are looking into the ability to get DTMF and call status information from free switch. So once you pushed a call to the free switch, you can monitor what's going on with that call in terms of status changes, being accepted, being in early, and so on, or what are the DTMFs. Or to be able to, again, once you have the call into FreeSwitch to be able to control that call through the ESL interface. So to actually tell FreeSwitch how to route internally that call again through the ESL interface. So that will give you some liberty in terms of integrating the FreeSwitch and OpenSIPS in terms of implementing complex scenarios. What is already there in terms of integration, we have the new SIPREC module. The SIPREC is a standard from for call recording. It's an ITF RFC saying, okay, how to standardly integrate an SIP server with an external recorder using also SIP, so SIP and RTP. And together with the guys from Orex, who actually sponsored this work, we achieved the integration through SIPREC of OpenSIPS with the Oreca call recorder. So right now, whatever call recorder supporting SIPREC you have, you may easily integrate it with OpenSIPS in order to do the active recording. Active recording means automatically extracting from the SIP server layer, of course, deciding for which calls you want to record or not, to extract the signaling and RTP completely transparent for the end user. So that's really something really useful because it's standard. And it's also powerful because you have a lot of control. Also, maybe the recorder is able to provide legal interception. Again, you have a lot of options in here. Also, we want to do integration with the asterisk in order to be able to fetch statistics. So, in order to load balancing and traffic dispatching to clusters of asterisk servers, quite similar like what we have right now working for FreeSwitch. We need to adapt the way of communicating with asterisk in order to take the information, the load information. But again, the concept is the same. So these are the things that we are planning to do for the 2.4 release. Once again, we will probably 70% of the effort will be invested into the clustering support under the hood and on top of the hood. So in the modules, which will take advantage of this clustering. And 30% of the effort will go in continuing integration work, because we have this feeling that all the time a VoIP platform, it's more than just a simple SIP engine in the middle. If you are not able to build a platform around it, it's more or less mission impossible. So that's why the integration effort will be on like an ongoing work for more or less all the releases. As I said in the very beginning, we have the timeline for the OpenSIPS 2.4. Mainly the week 12 to 16th of March 2018 will be the beta release. And having the general availability during the OpenSIPS Summit in Amsterdam, which will start on the 1st of May 2018. Yes, we go. We're gonna go again next year for Amsterdam, for the summit, and then during this event we will have the general availability for the 2.4. Now, at the end, if any of you have some feedback questions, we'll be more than glad to answer. Of course, the discussion is not limited to during this conference. Discussions may continue on the mailing list. about the topics. We just wanted to share in more details with you what are the plans for the 2.4, mainly to, let's say, adapt your plans or to synchronize your plans in terms of evolving or upgrading your systems with the work which is done on the project side. So that's the information we had for you. Again, any kind of further discussion is more than welcome. We also wanted to give more information about these plans in terms of, you know, how the user location cluster will look like, because we want to be sure that we are addressing as much as possible all the needs that you may have. What we put together was, as Livy said, based on our personal experience in terms of operating and building the platforms. Nevertheless, the whole community, it's a much vaster repository of knowledge and experience than only us. So that's why we want to validate what we plan to do with you before actually, you know, putting everything together. There's a question from Stas, which NoSQL database would be good to use with OpenSIPS cluster? Well, OpenSIPS has a generic NoSQL interface, the so-called CacheDB interface. And currently there are like four or five. We have the Memcached, we have Redis, Couchbase, Mongo, Cassandra. So from our perspective, any of them will work. And keep in mind that there is no, necessarily tight relation between the NoSQL cluster and the OpenSIPS cluster. Some clustering for the OpenSIPS can be achieved with no kind of DB support. For example, if you want to cluster profiles, if you want to cluster rate limiting and so on, or even there are scenarios for user location clustering, which do not involve any kind of NoSQL. But for the scenarios where a NoSQL database is required, we want to do it in such a way that we will support more or less all the backends. So we don't want to favorize any kind of backends. Probably we will see during the implementation phase if we need, let's say, some extra requirements in terms of what are the capabilities of the database. Let's say if a list support is required for the database, or if a document like support is required, and so on. But again, we will try to be as neutral as possible and to use standard DB, NoSQL DB capabilities. Okay.
Bogdan, yes. One of the things I noticed at the beginning of this is that you were recording it. Is this recording available for us to? Because there's other people I'd like to share this with in our organization.
Definitely, that's the purpose of the recording. We will make it available for everyone, for people who attended or for people who, for whatever reason, were not able to attend. So we will share the recording link with everybody.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Welcome. So I think we already stretched like almost like 1 hour and a half, or actually one useful hour in terms of content. So I would like to say thank you for everybody who joined and contributed to this presentation. And again, maybe you'll need a bit of a time to digest all the information. We will be more than glad to answer to any kind of feedback, ideas, questions you may have, because once again, it's not like we like, but we want to have the project, the OpenSUSE project, as a community-driven, and to be a project which is driven by the actual real needs in terms of using OpenSUSE for VoIP platforms. So don't be shy. Whatever ideas, even if they look crazy to you, don't hesitate. Send us to us anytime we can discuss. So once again, thank you. Depending on where you are, have a great evening, great day, and keep in touch with all of you through the mailing list or any other kind of channel that we may have. Thank you and have a great day.